Hey everybody, welcome to another issue of Hey Kids Comics. We're on issue 29, I believe. Issue 29 of It Came From the License. That's the story arc, and I remembered it this time. I don't, however, remember the issue name, so I'm going to throw it over to the talented and always forthwith, I don't know, Jedi Cole Houston, producer extraordinaire and co-host. What is the name of this episode?
I'm just impressed you remember the arc.
That's, you and me both, man.
That's a new one.
Right.
This is, in fact, the penultimate issue of this
penultimate
arc. Yes, we're going to get really smart on this one because this is books, games, and the public domain.
We've reached the acme.
So as not to throw the flow off, we have real people as well.
Right. We have reached the acme of the licensing.
And I understand that we told you a whole different order the last few weeks these were going to come out.
But in true comic book fashion, what we're doing is bucking the system. We're like the image of comic book podcasts. You never know
how
what
it
you're
is when there's
when
like an issue that you know you've been building and building to.
Right.
And then there's like a filler issue by some hack.
Well,
This isn't that.
It reminds
but
me
it's
of
a similar sort of thing where we had to make some editorial decisions.
Right. It reminds me of there's a podcast I listened to by the guy who created the show Community, and he plays Dungeons and Dragons on his podcast, and he also gets really drunk over the progression of his live podcasts. And at the end of it, he always plays Dungeons and Dragons. Well, he gets up there with his friends. He's playing Dungeons and Dragons, and one of the parts is his Dungeons and Dragons character needs to meet his dad, like in the game. So they're trying to find somebody to cast, essentially cast his dad and bring him on the podcast because it's a live podcast, and they have like they had Greg Proops on, and they have a whole bunch of different stars on to Eric Idle and a whole bunch of different stars on to do it. So he announces drunk that he's going to get Eric Idle as his dad on the podcast. So it goes out live and then proceeds to backpedal on that for like 6 or 7 episodes because he can't get Eric Idle on the podcast yet. So that's what this reminds me of. Like, we're totally gonna have Joss Whedon on the podcast tonight.
That's right. You heard it here, folks.
Well, I would like to start with things are gonna get a little wacky tonight. I should say that up front, because not only we're gonna really take in the entire bell curve of licensing in one issue tonight, because we're not only going to talk about things like, was it Classics Illustrated and things like that, but we're also going to talk about, I want to talk about things like the Hostess ads, because they're licensing after a fashion.
That's a good point. You know, I hadn't really thought about how a lot of it kind of went the other way, sort of a advertising cooperative going on there, as it were.
Yeah, and stuff like Blue Water Comics, which I don't know if anybody out there imagined that some of you had listened to the Collector Sector that we used to do for the United States of Geekdom. Cole and I, along with Rick and Stu, used to do a show called The Collector Sector, which is a weekly what's being released type show. And I used to, sometimes I would hit the Blue Water stuff, but I would gloss over it and never really talk about it because it was all kind of corny and cheesy. So we're going to hit on that a little bit. But where do you want to start, Cole? I'm going to leave it to you to tell me where you want to go.
Well, this is, you know, books, games, and the public domain. And I think that certainly the oldest sort of, not really licensed, since we're talking about public domain, you don't really have to license that, but it bookends nicely into books in general. That is sort of a combination of books and public domain literature.
Right.
Most notable of which is, of course, the Classics Illustrated series.
Which I don't have. I have it. Actually, I wish I would have gotten it. It's in the trunk of my car still. But I am holding, it's not a Classics Illustrated, but for 10 cents from Dell Comics. And this as well is coming to you for Alcon, my friend. It is Edgar Rice Burroughs' Tarzan. It is not in great shape.
Oh, a Dell edition. Wow.
It is a Dell edition. It is not in great shape. It is yours, my friend. I'm trying to see who did the art on this bad boy, and I can't find it. Hey.
Dell was an interesting thing because they actually did adapt some Burroughs stuff and some others, if I'm not mistaken. And, of course, the Classics Illustrated, it's just open season. So, you know, there was a time when that was probably the precursor to Cliff's Notes.
Yeah, it was definitely the precursor to the internet as we know it.
Indeed it was.
Being able to just go look for something. You could go to the comic shop and just...
You could pick up The Last of the Mohicans or Moby Dick or whatever.
I have...
Always reminds me of a story when Catherine was working at a bookstore years ago that's now long gone. It went the way of a lot of other bookstores nowadays, years before. But they had a call one night from someone who was having to do a report on Moby Dick and wanted to know what the name of the whale was. So they put him on hold, gave him a few minutes to steep, and then came back and told him it was something like Bob.
Bartholomew the whale. What do you, in your opinion, what do you remember as being the best, or, and keep in mind, a lot of this stuff, when we're talking about Classics Illustrated or books that they have adapted for comic books, we're talking about seeing something through a 30-year-old lens at this point, really. So in your mind, what do you see as your favorite, or the thing that you remember the most, or the one that you remember the most?
Or both.
The most.
I think really...
Did I say the most?
The funny thing is, oddly enough, I actually got into Classics Illustrated when I believe it was First Comics.
Okay.
Or it might have been... Or somebody picked up that title. They actually licensed the title from the original publisher, even though they didn't have to license the material, and tried to bring Classics Illustrated back. And they were moderately successful. It lasted a couple of years, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And that was really... I thought... really kind of a clever thing, because it was a classic title.
Yeah.
That had, you know, a comic book pedigree, and it was an attempt anyway, because they did things I don't believe the original ever did. They did a lot of things the original did, of course, but I'm pretty sure that they never adapted Ambrose Bierce's The Devil's Dictionary.
Wow.
Yeah. And really, that one, to me, was one of the best, because it, for one thing, brought a whole world of period sarcasm to my knowledge that I wasn't aware of.
It definitely informed your sense of humor.
Yes, Ambrose Bierce was brilliant, and, you know, it speaks of his time, but the definition for aborigine, and apologies to the entire world, these are not my words, but it was something to the effect of people of little worth found encumbering newly discovered lands.
Wow.
it just drips of that same sort of sarcastic definition, right, of words.
Right.
And it was all illustrated by Gan Wilson. It worked very well.
Yeah.
With his very unique squibble style.
That's really cool. I'm going to have to...
Really sticks out for me as far as public domain type of stuff.
How long ago was that when they re-released the...
That publication of that was easily 20 years ago.
Okay. So, but not nearly as far back as Classics Illustrated.
I think the original predates me.
Right, right.
So, and there aren't many things that I talk about that predate me. So naturally, I'm grinning ear to ear here.
Well, I got lucky because I found somebody that would actually just plain date me. So, yo.
Zinga.
Well, that being said, Count of Monte Cristo, and I keep saying that over and over again because that was my favorite one.
It's also my favorite sandwich.
Right? You know, it's been a long time since I've had a really good Monte Cristo. I used to sit around and read the Count of Monte Cristo
While eating
a Monte Cristo. Those days have long since passed. Life moves too fast these days.
I think the ultimate irony would be to read the Count of Monte Cristo while eating a Monte Cristo in Monte Cristo.
In Monte Cristo. With Monty Hall and Christie Brinkley.
When they could date and be known as Monte Cristo.
And I want to human centipede them together and literally make Monte Cristo. That's gross. But I still want to do it. But that's the one that really sticks out for me, because I wasn't... It all goes back again to the banana box full of comic books.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Because these were all... Like, these were the original run, you know?
Yeah, you had apparently some access to some great stuff.
Yeah, and I wasn't... Again, I really wasn't aware of what the Count of Monte Cristo was, or I think there was a Treasure Island in there. Some of those
things... Almost certainly. I think there was a time in this country where everyone was issued a copy of... Treasure Island Classics Illustrated.
You got them with your war bonds.
Something like a million, which in that day was unheard of.
Right, right.
You know, so some of the printer was laughingly saying, there aren't that many people in the world.
They were flying leaflets over Dresden and dropping
them.
But
look, everyone, it's a comic book in English.
In English, it's propaganda.
We don't speak or read.
Right. Propaganda, dude. It makes America great. America.
America.
But keep in mind, what they've done, and I remembered this, and I was, when I was doing research for the show, I stumbled back upon it again, but I remember seeing it on the shelves and actually picking it up and reading it and actually buying it for someone, mainly because I think it was at Borders in their cheap, whatever it was, like 70% off right as you walk in.
Borders, then at least there wasn't somebody leaning over the counter saying, this isn't a library.
Right. Where'd you get that, Walden Books? They used to think I stole stuff from Walden Books and would follow me around all day because I was a kid in a bookstore. God forbid.
Yeah, I did get the suspicious looks when I went in looking for new Tarzan novels. Not that they were new novels, but, you know, ones I didn't have.
Right.
Now, like, unfortunately, Edgar Rice Burroughs, unlike L. Ron Hubbard, stopped publishing after he died.
Right. L. Ron Hubbard is like the Tupac of classic sci-fi writers.
That's right. I think his new book's out next week.
I pulled a copy of Dianetics out at Half Price Books the other day, and a wall fell down. I wasn't aware. I wasn't aware that it was load-bearing.
You had to be careful with those things.
Yeah. Well, this became a vaudeville act somewhere along the line tonight. Marvel.
Yes, we're gonna be on a showboat in May.
Right. And then the next week, that showboat actually runs up to New York, and we're going to be in the Catskills.
We're about 4 week engagement unless we're held over.
That's right.
We kill up there, literally. That's why they have so many ambulances parked out.
My cat is actually telling me to stop. Carmen just came out and was like, listen, stop. Marvel re-released a bunch of, or made a bunch of them, redid a bunch of them, and updated them. I'm not going to say they didn't modernize the classics.
I don't think James Fenimore Cooper had adamantium claws in his work. That one struck me when...
I was shocked when Queequeg had repulsors. I didn't know...
Really?
Yeah, that was pretty interesting.
Uncas had adamantium claws. I thought was unique.
When they said that the hounds of Baskerville were actually that lupine race that Wolverine was from, I thought that was a little much.
Yeah, it probably really wasn't where they were headed with that originally.
But they re-released, like, Pride and Prejudice and a bunch of books. They modernized the covers. Like, Pride and Prejudice, I remember buying for someone, and it had like, kind of a 17 magazine riff on the cover. Now, it was released – I bought it in trade paperback form, but it was released in issues.
Was it like Wuthering Heights? Heathcliff is such a babe, or what?
Right. It's like – it's like 25 ways to please your man when he's freezing to death and the candle goes out on your shoe. But they updated them and released them as early as like 5 or 6 years ago. I thought that was really cool that they're still putting those out there.
It's kind of neat that publishers are still willing to take a chance with literature.
Right. I agree. And
speaking of literature that isn't free, there have been a lot of forays into that. I forget who the publisher was now, but somebody attempted to adapt the Wild Card series.
Okay, yeah.
Which is a good tie-in to comics because Wild Cards was like comic book as novel. And it was an anthology series, so it was really hit or miss. The first one did pretty well because it's just open season. Then after that, you know, you could kind of tell when you changed authors sometimes.
Yeah.
That some of them didn't get the world in which they were working. And then, you know, every now and again, it was sort of like a writing roulette because, you know, once you let your children on this playground, somebody else can come along and kill them.
Right.
And one of the best characters that ever came out of this was pretty much destroyed fairly early in. I was like, I had an Archer moment. Aw.
Also, if we're going to talk about books and literature being turned into books, came with a book, books and literature being turned into comic books, you've got a really prolific kind of pipeline of that in the sci-fi genre. But more so, for some reason, people went with the horror genre and really went buck nasty into the world of comic books with that. Like, there's some really obvious ones. Over and over again, you've seen Dracula. I mean, you've seen Dracula in Marvel.
Yeah, Dracula was kind of a gimme.
Yeah, in DC, but you also see a straight adaptation from Bram Stoker a lot. You've seen a few of those. Matter of fact, they did a couple back when vampires. They went Vampapalooza. What was it? A year and a half ago when we were talking about it on Collector Sector.
When X-Men did a little vampire heavy there for a while.
Yeah, seriously, they were painting with a broad brush. but they did a straight Bram Stoker adaptation then, mainstream Marvel Bram Stoker adaptation. But you also get like the one that was shocking me, and I knew about a quarter of them that were out there, but apparently they have literally adapted every H.P. Lovecraft short story, novel, novella, note on a napkin, crazy
exactly,
dream
yes.
into a comic book through one company or another. And some of them are really cool, and some of them they've kind of taken the idea of the world at which, and I don't think that H.P. Lovecraft ever set out to create a world for in which his creation were to live, you know? But
yeah, I think, you know, literally each story was independent of itself and didn't necessarily acknowledge that any of the others had ever happened. It wasn't like Stephen King where you mentioned something in passing. People are like, oh, that's Cujo.
Right, right. It's like, oh, what was his name? I forget the man with the, oh, God, why can't I remember his name? The guy that appears in The Stand and appears in, like, every book, that guy that he has that runs
Thread. I know only enough King to know that you can say things like, oh, that's Cujo, and people will understand what I'm talking about.
Right.
I can actually look like I know more than I do until you call me down on it like that.
But, no, it was, I can't, I'm calling you down, and I brought it up and can't remember the guy's name. And then Gary Sinise shows up on a motorcycle.
But what I should have done was simply say, yeah, I know who you're talking about. I can't remember either.
Right.
So we'll go in and post and make it look like that's what I said the first time.
We're way too honest. H.P. Lovecraft, and then they kind of took, I think the H.P. Lovecraft grew up in New England, and so that's where his stories are all based from, is New England. I don't think that they were meant to be a creation, that's just kind of where he was. He'd go out and look at the ocean and say, you know, okay, there's a great sleeping elder god out there waiting to be awakened and eat our faces, and then write a story about it.
What would be really nice about right now is there like some kind of big army of giant seed pod looking things
right.
with starfish faces and
Dagon
bat wings came flittering through here and picked people up at random
and
killed them.
Ground erupted as tentacles and
yeah.
Speaking of though, Stephen,
yeah, get Agent on phone. I got another story.
That's right, Stephen King heavily influenced by H.P. Lovecraft. He, again, created a really prolific pipeline into comic books. But his work, like, they finally started doing the Dark Tower series as comic books. And there is no end you can do to that. You know, I've got one of the Dark Tower books. I don't remember which one it is. Oh,
that was
is.
That board game that was endorsed by Orson Welles, wasn't it?
Right. with the VHS tape. No, this was like the Gunslinger and all that. Great, great books. Little confusing, but great books. And again, a lot of his stories tie back through that thread.
Have you personally read a comic adapted from specific adaptation, or at least attempting to be an adaptation? Do you find that if you've read the original source material, that you're not finding? For me, it just seems like there's stuff. That's not how I envisioned it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course.
Yeah. Like, okay, you got it dead wrong.
Right.
Like, did you even read the description when you drew this? Or did somebody just tell you kind of a vague idea?
That's the danger of adapting a license.
But, that's the danger in film and television and anything. Be like, oh, my God, that's not what I saw.
Right. But I think it's much worse going from, like, a film you can give up. A film is an hour long, 2 hours, an hour long, what the hell, 2 hours long,
it's
and then
a
you're
short film,
yeah, right? Is it 2 hour long? It's a student film. It's 2 hours long, and then you're done. A comic book is forever.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. That's that. So it's really hard if they get it wrong according to what you think it should be, the way you envision it. I have that issue a lot with my favorite author, whom I've talked about at other times, is R.A. Salvatore, and he writes a lot of amazing books that aren't just Dungeons and Dragons novelizations, but but he's most famous for those. They took who did it? Let me see, because I got him up here. It is DDP made these books, licensed by Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast, but they issue by issue made these books based on that series of books from my favorite author. And there's some things in there that I feel like they got absolutely unabashedly totally and completely wrong. And I read them, and I'm like, I cannot believe you people did this. But you've got to realize that it is as subjective for them as it is for you.
So, absolutely, assuming they read the source material.
Right, right. And because this was written actually by the author, I know that the it reads like the book, just the visuals are like, I'm like, some of it's like, meh, I don't know, no.
I do want to, you know, we're still on the subject of books, I want to put out a challenge here.
I've been waiting for you
to put this out. Can trickle that direction. I would like to see an adaptation of a specific book.
Okay.
That I remember from years and years ago. I'd like to see this adaptation done by Alan Moore because I want to see his take on the Cat in the Hat.
Oh, man. I want to see him do Cat in the Hat with Grant Morrison. I want to see them get together and collaborate on Cat in the Hat.
Yeah, it does lend itself beautifully to a lot further exploration.
All right. So let's wrap up books and literature. We got miles to go before we sleep. So do you have any final thoughts on books and literature, as it were?
Only that I can't remember the other book that came to mind.
But I think the hardest thing about this, and I think you nailed it on the head, is it's very easy to license a book and put it into comic form.
The nice thing is it would be very appealing to Rob Liefeld, who years ago said that artists don't want or need writers.
Right.
Half the work's already done, guys. Somebody already wrote the damn thing for you. All you got to do is draw it.
My thing is, it's very hard to do, like you said, without some kind of general consensus as to what these things look like. Because some of it does it very well, but then again, the things that do it very well are like Moby Dick.
And, oh, absolutely.
You know, you've got
another
a white
example
whale.
I was had thought of, there was a unique sort of thing where... there was an adaptation. I don't think it was a straight adaptation. I think it was just sort of a continuation or, you know, went in its own way. But I could be dead wrong about that. That now escapes me. There was a Xanth novel, one of the late ones, that long after I fell out of the series.
Right.
That was based on the Xanth novel Isle of View.
Okay.
Which, if you say it real slow, you can kind of work out the spelling.
Yeah.
What was it called? But it was basically a Xanth novel that Piers Anthony wrote for a young woman who had terminal cancer, who was a big Xanth fan and a big ElfQuest fan.
Okay.
And the two sort of merged. Because the character that was based on her, that was, you know, in honor of her, was a three-fingered elf instead of four-fingered elf. So it's kind of playing on the fact that the cartoon elves had just the three fingers.
You said Piers Anthony, and it made me laugh because my final thought on this, it's not really a comic to licensing thought, but it kind of ties in because what we're talking about is the visualization of what is in these books, because you're coming straight away with the content. Like you said, it's half done, quote unquote. But I was in, again, had the same half-price books that I pulled Dianetics out of and knocked down a wall. I was in the sci-fi section pulling random Piers Anthony books out and looking at the covers, at the cover art.
Yeah.
And just laughing hysterically at like, the golden unicorn-wearing armor and with a human face, you know, and... just whatever weird imagery is on all of those books.
Late into the series, it got just...
bizarre.
Yeah, and then it was just all about the puns.
So let's talk briefly about...
real quick, before we move into other things, because as we move into some of these other things, they are a more visual mediums that are media
that are being adapted. Right.
The reason I think you wind up with this in literature is because there isn't a preconceived visual.
Right.
That's universal. Unlike things we've touched on before, television, movies, Star Wars.
Yeah.
There are a lot of preconceived visuals. If you didn't know what Admiral Akbar looked like on the screen,
it'd be a trap.
You might hate the way Admiral Akbar looked in a comic based on a novel that he appeared in. But when I say Admiral Akbar, everybody's, after they said it's a trap to themselves,
or out loud,
they have
like
a visual.
I did. Yeah.
Where if I'm doing an adaptation of literature, my artist's drawing of Captain Ahab may differ from what you saw.
Right. But the nice thing about the classics versus some of the stuff we talked about is, conceptually, if you open Moby Dick as a comic book, and there's a guy on the boat you're going to be like, obviously, that's probably Captain Ahab. So you can draw that line because it's such a known source. But there's some things that just don't work that way.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's move on to – I want to move on to comic books. Or not comic – yeah, of course I do, idiot.
It is comic books.
God. Can you tell we're ramping up to Alcon?
Indeed. Video ramping games. Up no sleep for days.
Right. Let's talk about video games a little bit.
Video games is a unique one because it's so prolific.
Oh, yeah.
It's just been open season. The licensing must be a dime.
Well, here's the thing. I went back and looked, right? Like, I was looking today. I'm like, okay, I know some of the video games I want to talk about when we do the show, but, you know, there's so many that I'm not aware of. So let's look into some things. And I'm looking at the video game list, and every single video game that I can think of has a comic book. Like, yeah, that one. Like, everything, Assassin's Creed, Halo's, even the older ones. Like, do you remember the Mario Brothers and the Sonic comic books?
Yeah. We used to carry the Sonic comic book for a while at the shop.
Yeah. For me, there's a couple that really stand out. I think for me, the first one I read was Doom. The Doom crossover.
Oh, okay.
Which was ridiculous. Because
was the entire comic drawn in first-person perspective, like point of view?
It would have been awesome if it was.
Panel after panel of the monotonous.
But I don't think it was. Here's the thing. I don't think it was. The other part is, if LaFell didn't draw the Doom comic book, his later art style was definitely informed by it. Let me say that, but it's the first one that I really remember reading. And it's the first one I remember going, okay, I'm never reading another comic book adaptation again. It really spoiled my desire to look into that, you know, and it was done by ID. Do you remember ID? Well, ID was the company that made the comic book. But the other part is that speaks to the power of this, you know, was that ID and Interactive Software could make their own comic book, publish it, and get it released. That tells you the power of comic books when that happened, you know, when this came out. But the ones that really were informative to me, the ones that I liked when I allowed myself to read them again, was the Indiana Jones one. What was it called? Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones, The Fate of Atlantis from Dark Horse.
Right. Which was based on a video game.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing there, because we can fold it into this one, even though there were Indiana Jones comics that would technically be based on the movie.
Right.
This is a comic based on a video game based on a movie. So really, our approach to this is the original source.
Right.
And the story of The Fate of Atlantis came from the video game, not from other sources.
And it really treads into that Lucasfilm Star Wars area where it gets to this kind of Mobius incestuous strip of, is it a license based on a comic book or a movie or a video game or a novel or a TV show or, you know, because it all kind of blends together into this, you know, miroquois of strange and wonderful Star Wars stuff that you never know where it comes from. Did it come from the toys, or did it come from Phantom Menace? You know, did it come from what's the name of the Clone Wars cartoon, or did it come from the Ewoks cartoon, or did it come? You know, so there's all kinds of different ways.
What exactly was the source material ultimately?
Right, and sometimes there's no way to know. Sometimes even the guys at LucasArts are like, I don't know, whatever.
Did we create that? I have no idea.
But the big ones for me when it comes to video games that they turned into comic books were the Batman Arkham Asylum and Arkham City, which we talked about a little bit during Collector Sector days, where I don't think they did it before. Now, I'm probably going to be corrected, but I don't think they did it before Arkham Asylum. I know they did it during, like, concordant with release and then after release, where they did a mini series based on the story of the comic or of the video game. This time, though, they did a prequel to the video game in comic books.
Wow, a very wise marketing maneuver.
Right. And it's Batman, so it's not like it's not going to sell.
Yeah.
You know, not to mention the fact that it's an original story. It encapsulates every single villain that you would ever want. In a Batman comic, as well as some of the heroes.
Is that a crazy quilt?
You know what? Damned if it doesn't. And that makes me upset. But I will tell you this. In the Arrow TV show, Yeah. We did get a Firefly.
Nice.
Which was a nice Batman villain nod in that. So there you go. But that for me were my favorites. You got the storyline of the ramp up in the storyline to Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. You got the stories. You got really good art because they really brought in, it's Batman. So they didn't pull any punches with the creative team like they do a lot of times on licensing adaptations, which is they'll take the newbies or the kind of the untested and put them on a lot of these licensing things because they don't have much to lose. It's a known quantity. It's kind of the idea of putting Jennifer Aniston in a trailer for a movie. you know how much money that movie's going to make. If you have a general license for like a TV show or a movie or a video game, you kind of have an idea of what that's going to do regardless of who you put on the art.
You have an idea. You're not going to have a blockbuster, but at the same time, you'll make back what you spent on it and more.
Right. So you can kind of put the new guy that you just hired on that, see how he does, that type of thing. Kind of flip the nickel at him. You know,
yeah,
hey,
it's like, on the news they complain that, Jennifer Aniston's in this movie and opening weekend it made $1.50, but the thing about it is it costs 12 cents to make.
Right, exactly.
They don't tell you that part.
But the Batman ones, really, they pulled out all the stops. They had the all-star teams on making them and creating them, and that's pretty sweet. So do you have any video game adaptations that you remember really well?
Oddly enough, I really don't have that much experience in that. I do remember reading like the first issue, or maybe I just read a preview book, for one of the most unique adaptations, not necessarily of a video game, but borrowing into at least the iconic name of a video game company.
Okay.
And that was DC's Atari Force.
Oh.
Which couldn't have had less to do with anything Atari except the name and their stylized A.
Right. I remember Atari Force.
Atari Force. Yeah, it was an ensemble book. It was just, you got your human character, you got your big rat mouse bat alien character, you got baby Huey armadillo creature. You got like a platypus reject from the god-awful Lost in Space movie.
I remember having Atari Force.
And you got like a hairband guy with the trying to look like he was in that Barry Bostwick film.
I do like, and I'm looking at an image of it right now. I'm looking at a splash page of Atari Force, and there was one guy that was the what's his name? Martin Champion, who is smoking a pipe in the splash page, just right there smoking a pipe, like right on, brother, do it up.
That is just showing you the level of confidence this man has when going and facing intergalactic threats,
imminent danger. He's gonna bring his pipe with him.
He's gonna chaw on his favorite pipe for a while. He's got that really nice tobacco that kind of smells of apple.
Right. It's the kind of thing you buy a bag of and just throw it under your car seat to keep your car smelling nice all year round.
And for those of you who probably read Atari Force, no, I don't believe there was any mention as to what type of pipe tobacco he had. That was completely made up.
Well, who wrote Atari Force? Do you remember?
Does anybody know or care? It was one of those things that it was just every now and again, DC would just throw stuff out there. Marvel was the same.
Oh, yeah.
And you just throw it out there and see what stuck. I think the best example of Marvel throwing something out there and seeing if it stuck was, and we'll get to this in the next episode, was a comic that it lasted maybe, 14 issues or something like that.
Yeah.
And this issue, it was the only issue. Because back then, if you had a limited series, it would say, like, number one of, like, one of four, one of six, what have you.
Yeah.
On the cover. And it was, like, issue 14 of a 14-issue limited series. And it's like, man, all of a sudden you're like Paul Simon. Who do you think you're fooling?
Who's zooming who, buddy?
It's like, yeah. Why don't you admit it was an abject failure?
Just go out on a limb on that.
So the running joke, I remember with some friends, especially with Steve and I, was that anytime a series tanked, it was like X issue of however, like Star Wars is a 125 of 125 issue limited series.
Right. That's awesome. Okay, do you have any more comic books? Are we moving on from comic books? Or
video games
on comic books? God.
So we've kind of covered everything in the original title. It was books, games, and the public domain.
So let's move on
and
to
then
something
all of a
weirder.
Sudden we get kind of Skip Stevenson here.
Right, we get a little weird up in here. Let's get a little weird.
A little Peter Billingsley, a little... what's her name? And we talk about real people, for those of you who aren't old enough to get the Skip Stevenson reference.
Right. Here's the interesting thing about this is, again, and I keep saying back when, you should listen to some of the less racist editions of Collector Sector back in the day. Because I would gloss over a lot of these comic books that Blue Water Productions was putting out. And one of the ones that we touched on a lot was during, and this is what really brought it to our attention, was during, I think it was a free comic book day a couple years ago, 2-3 years ago, they did the Misadventures of Adam West.
Oh, that's right.
Free comic.
Yes.
And it wasn't, we're not talking, this isn't Adam West Batman. This is Adam West, the actor Adam West, the guy, and his misadventures.
And not Adam Wee.
And then there was a
My name one. Isn't Adam Wee.
You do a really good Adam West, by the way.
Thank you.
You're citizen. Welcome. I did also promise at the end of the episode at some point I'll do a little Michael McDonald. Stu made me promise to do some Michael McDonald, so.
Oh, well, absolutely. Since we're kind of invoking Collector Sector, it's important.
Yeah. But they do all kinds of real-life people. They license... real life people. It's almost like some kind of weird identity
slavery.
It's
like biography on A&E, except you've got to read it.
Right. I mean, like, just a quick glance of their website. Honey Boo Boo, One Direction, Adam West, of course, Eartha Kitt. They did a lot of the Batman, the original Batman cast. Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates have their own. And then they do things like the Olivia Newton-John. They have a female force series of comic books, which
then they do like Hillary Clinton
and they've done Sarah Palin, they've done Hillary
yeah.
Clinton,
and the Sarah Palin one had like big words there, no big words. it actually had the old Spidey Super Stories imprint that said, "Easy reader says I can read this."
Right. Now they've also done Dorian Gray, so they've kind of ventured into.
Well, in that case, with a adaptation, they had a picture of him.
Right. they just could never show it to the guy drawing
yeah,
that's
it. True. Not to him anyway.
One of the things, no stranger to satire or irony, apparently, Blue Water Productions did one of their female force comics on RuPaul. Wow. They've got a tribute comic to Elizabeth Taylor, Julie Newmar. Has her own, The Secret Lives of Julie Newmar. They've also got a Logan's Run comic book. So it's very weird, very strange series of comic books. It's kind of like, I imagine it, if I was allowed to sit around with an infinite amount of resource and money and just say, hey, this week let's do a comic on RuPaul. Or let's do why haven't we done a tribute comic to Marilyn Monroe? Let's just do that. Can we just do that and then do it?
And there it is. Yeah, I mean, Hervé Vilches. They haven't done it yet. They should.
That's why they don't let us have our own comic company, Cole.
That's right. Adventures of Hervé Vilches.
It would be like, why haven't we done a Ricardo Montalban comic yet?
Why haven't we even done a whole series of Ricardo Montalban comics?
Why haven't we adapted Fantasy Island? Why hasn't anybody done that?
I know that you could. That's just got like all kinds of possibilities, and no one would begrudge you the adamantium claws,
right?
Except Marvel.
There's a parody comic that they do called 50 Shades of the Twilight Games. They do a Wrath of the Titans comic, not based on the movie or Clash of the Titans, but based literally on the classic Greek heroes. So they just, anything that crosses their desk, they kind of make. Like, they have political power comics with, they've done a ton of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney comics. Barack Obama, they did McCain comics, they did they've kind of, they're in the business of taking real people and making them into licenses. It's kind of interesting. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. Because they're not particularly good.
Yeah, it's one of those things where do you literally are begging the question, where do you go with this?
Right.
Because, yeah, hooray, it's a it's like a biography of these people as, you know, it's almost like Classics Illustrated, only it's like real stuff. And then you kind of are left wondering, you know, is there really a market for that? There must be, because they keep doing it.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's just rather surprising that
they're in business.
You know, I mean, I can see where, you know, the Honey Boo Boo would be one of those things you do because it just invites morbid curiosity.
Right. Right.
People will pick it up for the same reason they picked up the Honey Badger comic.
I forgot about the Honey Badger comic. Oh, that deserves its place in this episode. I'm glad Indeed. That you brought it up. Oh, the Honey Badger. But in the same vein as what we were just talking about with it invites kind of that morbid curiosity, they also do some really interesting things. In my mind, the Blue Water Comic Production Company that does the comic books is a lot like Asylum Pictures, where they're willing to try just about anything. They're the kind of that last bastion of Roger Corman shot comics that's out there. There aren't a lot of those anymore. I'm looking at one right now, which is Ray Harryhausen presents It Came From Beneath the Sea ... again. Huh. So they're willing to try all these really interesting little things, you know, that maybe a lot of mainstream comic companies aren't willing to try. Good on them for that. Weird on them for doing a bunch of the stuff that they do, you know? But good on them for a lot of what they do, because a lot of what they do is pretty fun, in my opinion.
Especially when they can take real people and then fictionalize and dramatize them.
Right.
Like the Julie Newmar and the Adam West, and what great sports to just let them have that little bit of fun.
Well, and who else would make a Vincent Price Presents comic book and actually have Vincent Price in it?
Oh, very nice.
You know, so that's another really cool thing that they do. And then they have a lot of licenses that would go back into other parts of this story arc. But then they also have things like Quartermain and things like that as well. So good on them for what they're doing. There's a lot of really cool stuff, but there's also a lot of really weird things too. So I thought that they deserved mention.
And I think perhaps the weirdest is during the 90s especially, there was a huge push to get what was once known as Comic, C-O-M-I-X.
Right.
Out of the, you know, head shops and backwater, you know, ages ago, things like Fritz the Cat
yeah.
or the Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers.
Really underground.
Yeah, very underground
Ash
stuff.
Can.
You know,
yeah.
you had to know a guy who knew a guy or, you know,
right.
Free with Every Lid or things like that.
You had to walk up to a guy and say, keep on trucking.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
He'd reach up under his bell bottoms.
Crumb would punch you in the face and then hand you a copy of the
right.
Mr. Natch. But, they, you know, during the 90s, there was a big push because all of a sudden people realized that there was an adult audience for comics. So why weren't there adult comics for that audience?
Yeah.
And in came the very lewd and, you know, often just trash. I mean, it was just like, if there could be anything worse than the porn industry as far as quality, it was the porn comic industry.
Yeah.
If any sad hack who couldn't make it at Marvel could easily scribble some big boobies and get himself a job for about 6 or 8 months until the latest, you know, until the Big Booby Adventures tanked and they had to move on to something else.
Then they went back to Marvel.
That's right. They went back to Marvel and got assigned one of those license books.
That's right.
There was a company that started out at Revolutionary Comics, I believe, and then kind of jumped from place to place. But in this vein, there was an adult comic book called Carnal Comics.
Wow.
Which the flagship title, it was the imprint, their flagship title was True Stories of the Adult Film Star.
Wow.
And so they actually did autobiographical and possibly even some autobiographical comics on Linda Lovelace and Harry Reams and
man,
John Holmes.
Is it wrong of me to kind
and
of...
And then on, like, porn directors, I guess, of some note. Apparently, they're ones who've made a name for themselves.
Yeah, they're the ones that broke the 1001 movies in 1 year mark. Is it wrong of me to kind of want those books for like, a weird kind of pop culture?
No, you know, honestly, every now and then, when I was working for Diamond, because it's been years ago now, and there's not a damn thing they can do about it.
Right.
The location where I worked is long gone, and I would suspect if I tried to contact anyone to verify my employment, it would be so long ago they wouldn't know what the hell I was talking about.
Right.
Yeah, the interesting thing there was, you know, every now and again, you know, once the dust had settled from the book pull, you go back there and like sneak a peek at some of the adult books, and you know, a lot of them were just garbage.
Right.
But it was just kind of hilarious to see some of the stuff these guys were putting out.
Right, right. Like, it would just be one of those really kind of interesting centerpieces to something to just have, you know, oh yeah, that's my John Holmes signed comic book. It's weird. It would just be weird.
But you know, they also did some biographical stuff on non-porn stars, not under the Carnal Comics label, of course.
Oh yeah?
But they, you know, most of it was just sort of drivel, but
yeah.
I guess if you were keen to find out about the career of Linda Lovelace and you didn't want to be obvious about it.
You actually, you know, you used to have that thing, that old trope where you'd be sitting in class and you'd have your book out, then the teacher would take the book away, and then you'd have like your Spider-Man comic under the textbook.
Absolutely.
You would have three layers at that point, wouldn't you? You'd have your...
Exactly. Now, you would get like Archie... to put over your copy of, you know, Adventures of I've run out of porn star names that I know.
Yeah, Adventures of Ron Jeremy.
Exactly. That was a special double issue.
There's a couple other real life people comics that I kind of wanted to mention before we move on to it. What time is it? Does anybody know? Oh, we're getting close.
Yeah.
There's a couple more real quick. One of them was, there was a crossover, speaking of video game comics, there was a crossover with Sonic the Hedgehog and the Image Comics people, the Image Comics comic book characters, which
wow.
was a really weird thing, where was it Nighthawk and Savage Dragon and the Max and Spawn meets Sonic and his video game buddies, his fun loving rated E for everybody video game buddies. So you had the Prince of Hell and Savage Dragon, which, good God, if you haven't, you should listen to our first story arc if you want to hear about Savage Dragon.
you can learn things about the Savage Dragon you never wanted to know.
The Shadowhawk, which again we talked about that in the first run too. You know, and then Sonic and his amazing little buddy friends that run and collect coins. Like, what? Another one I wanted to mention briefly was the very quick introduction and exit of the rapper Eminem into comic books, which was done in a Marvel comic book. It was a serious comic book. It was the Eminem and Punisher crossover, which seems to me to be a little rapacious, but that's me. drawn by Salvador La Rocha. So it was taken seriously, you know. And then there was one I stumbled across and I completely forgot about, which was it was the Avengers, but it was essentially the West Coast Avengers before they had the name the West Coast Avengers, on the set of David Letterman. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
I believe
I do.
It was awful. It was Wonder Man in his awful red jumpsuit with Rocket Belt. It was the Beast right after the Beast signed up to be on, you know, on the Avengers. You had Hawkeye, you had Black Widow, you had I believe Black Panther was on this particular team. And then the funniest thing as I'm looking at it is the window, the panel in the top left, where they usually have the pictures. At this period of time in the 80s, they had the pictures of all the people that were in the comic book. Do you remember that? Like all the characters.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Where they had like the headshots of, if it was the X-Men, they would have the headshots of Cyclops and Jean Grey and all those guys up in that window in the left side where it said Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, they have all of the members of the Avengers, but they're turned around. Their back is to the audience. So the gag is they don't even want to be associated with this. But it's in the same vein as Jason was talking about during the TV show episode.
Oh, exactly.
Which was the Saturday Night Live, not ready for primetime players. Jim Belushi, Samurai...
Jim Belushi gets Silver Samurai's ring.
Right, which is still about the best thing I've ever heard in my life. So as we wind down, as we bring this episode to a close, do you have any last licenses you would like to talk about, since we're in the potpourri phase of this episode?
That's true. That's an interesting thing to bring up, of course, catching me completely off guard. I think, you know, since we are in the potpourri, we can kind of like touch back on a few things
sure,
that we've talked about in the past and may have missed. It's just, you know, the more you do these types of shows, we try to be as prepared as possible. And then the second you're done, you think of like 10 more.
Oh, yeah.
Like in this case, 10 more TV, movie, various licenses that you're like, oh, crap.
Right.
How did I forget that? But that, you know, that's part of the fun is that, you know, we've probably opened the door to a lot of that to the listeners as well, where you're thinking, you know, wow, I actually kind of remember having something like that at one time.
And not all of them are bad. And even if they are bad, there's a lot of nostalgia there, too.
That's so true. Going back and kind of revisiting the things that, you know, that once seemed like they were really great.
Right. I have old A-Team comics that I want to go back and read, but I know they're awful.
Yes.
But I want to go back and read them anyway. No, you're absolutely right. Were there any of those that came to mind that you wanted to bring up?
They did, and I promptly forgot them because this wasn't the issue for it.
I'll tell you what, once things calm down and we're getting ready to go to AllCon, we're going to kind of take a little more relaxed recording schedule. We're still going to record every week and get stuff out there for you guys, but we're not going to be hitting the story arcs as hard. It's not going to be as meaty. It's going to be a little more fun and kind of loose. Why do I feel like I'm talking about
stool? And I believe if we're not too terribly careful, we're actually going to try to do something we haven't done before, and that's actually record a show in person.
Oh, yes.
Side by side.
We're going to do it together.
As us.
As us, which is going
to be... In real time at an event.
At an event. At least one show. We'll see. We get crazy sometimes.
That's right.
You never know. There's one last thing I want to talk about, and that it's not as much a license you and I were talking about a little bit, as it is sort of a weird symbiosis type situation. And I think it's fitting since they just went out of business that we discuss the long-standing relationship between Marvel and Hostess.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We do need to touch on that.
If you remember, and it's how long do you think, when did they stop? If you had to guess, and I'm not asking for an actual number.
I would say the last of that ad campaign had to have been sometime in the 80s.
Right, right. I would say so, too.
And both Marvel and DC, but Marvel seemed to be the one I noticed the most, maybe because I was reading more Marvel at the time.
Right.
And that was the neat thing about it was that if Hostess was advertising in a Marvel book, they had a campaign that included Marvel characters.
Oh, yeah.
You had, like, the Incredible Hulk fighting this mad florist who had created all kinds of plant creatures like Artichoke and Rhododendron.
And then all of a sudden, the day would be won by snowballs or
exactly.
Something like that. Was so bizarre.
You know, Twinkies or cupcakes or delicious fruit pies would be all that you needed to quell this dangerous criminal.
Right. And there were some very weird ones, too, for DC had Joker in a bunch of them.
Really?
Yeah, like they went villain on a bunch of these. Like, I'm looking at one right now where it was the Joker the Joker as the cornered clown. And keep in mind, these aren't crappy for the time period. We're not talking crappy art either.
Yeah, they got some of the better artists to do these. I mean, you didn't have your George Perez's and such, but you did have some pretty decent artwork.
Right. He tries to bribe cops with fruit pies, the Joker does. So there's like all these weird... You know what? I'm going to send this link to Cole. Cole, will you post this on the...
Yeah, we'll make that part of this post so you can kind of see what the hell we're talking about.
We found a kind of a repository for these old Hostess ads and comic books. They're just brilliant. Just absolutely insane. There's one with Catman in it, Batman and Catman. There's all kinds of really interesting, funny ones.
Apparently DC just... took a whole different approach to the the whole issue because Marvel didn't seem to want their villains in the midst of all this.
No, and I think the Joker's really the only villain that made an appearance. He was that popular that they let him. I mean, they had some really Penguin. I'm sorry, Penguin was in there too. They had some really DC had some really interesting choices for this. They had a Red Tornado. At one point, do one. They had Plastic Man do one. So they had some really strange choices for these. They did have they had Wonder Woman. So they had a lot of kind of a lot of the standards, but Green Lantern had himself a couple. So yeah, there's some really cool stuff in there. Aquaman had his fair share.
Interesting thing with Aquaman doing Hostess is, I don't know about you, but when you expose any Hostess snack to seawater,
right,
it generally doesn't work out that well.
There's a line. Actually, there's a line. Like I don't know how he finds. There's like a crash landed rocket ship outside of Atlantis, but he's like, you know, something about great taste Hostess Twinkies. We have nothing like this in Atlantis. Now we can enjoy delicious Hostess Twinkies here in Atlantis too. It's like, what? So weird.
That's one salty Twinkie.
Right. And then.
I do want to point out, though, is while we're talking about this, I believe it was in the pages of E-Man from First Comics, It was in either that or it was in the pages of Normal Man.
Okay.
Trying to remember which it was. But they did some wonderful parodies of these.
Oh, yeah?
Where they had some of their characters, some of the First Comics characters. Like one of them was, one of the characters was in a story called The Butler Didn't. And the guy's poisoned, or he thinks he's been poisoned, and the detective works out that he was actually just enjoying bitter almond-flavored Twinkies. So it wasn't cyanide. It was just that delicious bitter almond flavor.
This one. Okay, this is the last one I'm going to touch on, then we'll close out the show. The one I'm going to read you, it's almost like Reader's Theater, is The Incredible Hulk versus the Roller Disco Devils. And I remember this one. That's why I wanted to look at it. You got these guys, and they all got boom boxes and roller skates, and they're just tooling down the road like some kind of like insane disco gang that escaped from Belle Reve or something. And the Hulk rolls them up in a piece of concrete, you know, so essentially killing them. And that's I mean, that's what happens
here. Sort of like the cask of Amontillado with cupcakes.
It really is. They're rolling down the street. The Hulk jumps in from nowhere. Just like, if you saw this happen in real life, you'd be so horrified. You wouldn't know what to do. Like, the Hulk just lands on this gang of what essentially probably is just good-natured, you know, alternative lifestyle enjoying, roller skating, disco loving guys, and lands behind them and rolls them up in concrete, in asphalt from the road. Rolls them into a giant, like, what looks like what was the devil's food cake roll that they used to have? Swiss Miss rolls or something?
Oh, like a ho-ho.
And rolls them up into this, like, weird Swiss Miss roll. Then the line is everybody's sitting around eating Hostess fruit pies again, because apparently that's what you do after you murder 7 people. The line is, why can't all humans be nice like Hostess fruit pies? I think Hulk is confused. I think Hulk is confused. All right, so why don't we...
Hulk have sweet tooth. I was actually trying to see if I could locate at least one of those parody ads.
Right.
And needless to say, the parodies of Hostess Cupcake and Twinkie, etc. ads are run rampant. I was rather surprised, and this is a character you will hear about on the next story arc.
Okay.
And I'm going to leave it at that. Omaha the Cat Dancer, actually, they did a parody. I had no idea. It looks like Reed Waller himself drew that.
Oh, okay. So, final thoughts?
I think that throughout this entire arc, mm-hmm. I've been surprised. You know, I thought I knew a lot about the various incarnations of licensing we were going to be talking about.
Right.
Until we started talking about these various incarnations. And there's still so much more to discover.
Right. There's every time I go to do more research on these things, you know, you come up with all this, and I've been doing the research for the next issue of the story arc, which is the final issue, which is the toys issue. And you know, that's a subject, if you're familiar with our show here, that's near and dear to our hearts. We absolutely love
absolutely
toys. And you know, so really twist my arm to make me do research toys, right? Which is what I do every day anyway.
That's
but
right.
To find all of these comic books that I knew existed that were based on toy lines, and a lot of the toy lines I had forgotten about from my youth and from my childhood.
Yeah, it was really amazing how, again, the comic publishers, even the big guys, were just rolling the dice from time to time. Oh, yeah, let's give this a try.
So really, in doing this, not only are we finding out that it's a continuing process, but it's really giving us a glimpse into our youth and how much of this was pervasive that we kind of weren't aware of or we didn't remember was a thing that is absolutely a thing. And it's so much fun. I mean, this is a lighter story arc for us, obviously, you know, than some of the prior ones have been. But it's so much fun just to get in there and remember reading a lot of these and discovering things. And I think that's the reverse of this too. As my real final thought is this: as you go out and you find these things, if you go to a Half Price Books and you're looking through the old comic books or quarter bins, or you know, you're at a convention and you're digging through boxes, you're going to find a lot of these licensed comic books. And if you do, you know, give them a shot, because you never know if you're going to want to go back and watch old episodes of Battlestar Galactica or Buck Rogers. But if you pick up a comic book, maybe you do. Maybe you didn't realize that Logan's Run might be something you were interested in until you read a comic book about it. And we always say read more comic books.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Well, Cole, do you have any plugs?
Well, I do want to plug the sister station, as it were. The companion station,
sure,
to this very website. If you're, you know, catching us on iTunes, you're not sure where the hell we're coming from. It's Jedi Cole Universe. That's JediCole.com.
Right, right.
And our companion site is Convention Awareness Texas. Their Convention Awareness Project Texas,
Captain Texas,
which is conventionawarenesstx.blogspot.com, where you can get all the poop, the ongoing, updated, I'm discovering, comprehensive listing of every convention, a fan, collector, gamer, all genres of conventions. I had to add another one today.
Different than the
one
we just talked about?
I had to add another one yesterday.
Jeez. Yeah, because I wrote you and said, hey, how about this one? You're like,
yes.
God, really?
And it's really been amazing. To either, like, I've actually been writing to conventions where their sites, you know, the last one was in 2011 or the last one was last year and there's no real indication there's going to be another. And I'm starting to hear back from some of these conventions. So if you're in Texas or you go to Texas or you want to go to conventions in Texas, visit the Convention Awareness Project Texas. I'm constantly updating. If you scroll down far enough, there's a list for February through December. And as I hear about new things, I just update that list. And,
tail
end of this month, it'll just become March through December.
I'm going to say this about this project that Cole's working on. When I met Cole and we started talking and I started getting to know him, this was something that was really important to you back then.
Absolutely.
You just did not have a means with which to do it. And now you do. And it's amazing to watch this thing unfold, how passionate you are about it and how passionate you are about getting the word out that these things are happening and talking to the guys that are putting on the shows. And it's really, really interesting and cool to watch it happen. So congratulations, man. This product really is coming in.
It really is a personal passion of mine. It's been an ongoing. Many, many years ago, I did an event called Convention Awareness Day. I was actually able to repeat that one time. And you know, ever since then, it was just always kind of, you know, it's like Val Kilmer and Top Secret. It was kind of mulling and creeping and crawling around in my head.
Right. And now, every day can be Convention Awareness Day. If
exactly.
You go to
CapTex. That's really what was needed. It's harder than hell to get even a handful of these folks together in one place, especially from a state as big as Texas.
Right, right. And you're doing it, and that's awesome. And if you like Texas and you like conventions, come see us at AllCon the 8th, 9th, and 10th, where Cole said at some point at an undisclosed location, it's like one of those secret 80s parties, we will have a live recording. Just don't know when.
Or where.
Not to mention the fact that there will be a ton of game shows, a ton of live podcasts from us, from United States of Geekdom. We have a podcaster summit that Cole's going to be a part of and I'm going to be moderating for the United States
of Geekdom.
And there's
just more things.
Oh my God.
Things to do, even the things we're not personally involved in, that you can shake a stick at.
We're not going
to
get into everything right now that we're involved in. We will in our pre-AllCon show, which we are going to record and have up before AllCon so everybody can listen to it and get an idea of what's going on. That's not going to happen tonight, but stay tuned for that. And AllCon, all-con.com, if you want to get all the skinny poop.
That, .org.
.org. I'm sorry, .org. All-con.org if you want to get all the skinny poop on what's going on.
And also watch the Jedi Cold Universe website, watch the Convention Awareness Project website, and even over at our other home on the internet, the United States of Geekdom, UnitedStatesofGeekdom.com, the United States of Geekdom website.
Right.
Because I'm going to start having every few days coverage that spreads across. It's like a comic book crossover.
It's viral.
Yeah, so we're going to have a coverage of all types that'll go through all of my various homes on the internet.
Right. All right, guys. So next week, toys. Yay!
Hey, toys.
Yay, toys. All right, so I'm going to close this out. Regardless of what kind of comic books you're into, regardless of how you get them digital delivery, I don't care what they're about. They can be about – if you can find a licensed Golden Girls comic, I'm going to tell you to buy that comic book, collect that comic book, and most importantly, enjoy it. Get the things you enjoy and read them and support it, because that's what's really important. Stay tuned, guys. Toys are next week. It's going to be awesome. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody, and see you soon.
Good night, guys.